there's a man in the funny papers we all know. He lives way back a long time ago. He don't eat nothing but a bear cat stew. Well, this cat's name is Alley-Oo. He got a chauffeur that's a genuine dinosaur. And he can knuckle your head before you count too far. He got a big ugly club and a head full of howl. Like great big lions and grizzly bears. He's the toughest man that is alive, wearing clothes from a wildcat's hide. He's the king of the jungle jazz.
Look at that caveman go.
He rides through the jungle tearing limbs off of trees, knocking great big monsters dead on their knees. The cats don't bug him cause they know better, cause he's a mean motor scooter and a bad go-getter. He's the toughest man there is alive, wears clothes from a wildcat's hide. He's the king of the jungle jive.
Look at that caveman go.
There he goes. Look at that caveman go. He sure is hip, ain't he? Like what's happening? He's too much. Ride, daddy, ride. Hi-yo, dinosaur. Ride, daddy, ride. Get him, man. Like Hipsville. You know. Ooh, wow.
Well, boys and girls, I want to dedicate that song to the greatest black president we've ever had. Oh, we've only had one? Oh, okay. But he's not so great. But sometimes he acts like Alley-Oop. What do you think? That's the Hollywood Argyles. That song came out while I was in high school, as I remember. Yeah. Terrible Tommy here in the bunker. It's nice and cozy in the bunker, but it's zero outside. I went out for a little bit and didn't put my sock hat on, and my ears almost fell off. Yeah, we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for everything. Just get an envelope, throw it in there, and send it. Yeah, right. And our resist.com giant intergalactical website that is reaching as far out as the constellation of Orion is there for you. You can get anything off of it. Get anything off of it. Yeah. And pretty soon we'll have our streaming program completely set up for our radio shows. We have hundreds of radio shows, and you'll be able to tune in anytime. 24 hours a day, I think. The date today is February the 18th, 2015, Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. And this is the day I meet with my high school classmates, the class of 56, for our monthly luncheon, where we can tell all the dirty little secrets and stories on each other and have a good time. Yeah. Quite a few of us still left, you know. We lost one this month due to a lot of cancer, but most of us are standing tall, baby. Yeah. Boy, I sure wish I had one of those Star Wars supporters. Transporters, not supporters. I'd transport myself out of this goddamn refrigerator and be down in Miami Beach or down there in maybe San Diego or maybe down there in Southern Arizona or someplace, any place. Okay, we're going to start off this morning by reading you an interesting quote, and I bet you anything you couldn't guess who made this statement. Here we go. Quote, "Of course the people don't want war, but after all, it's the leaders of the country who determine the policy, and it's always a simple matter to drag people along, whether it's a democracy, a fascist dictatorship, or a parliament, or a communist dictatorship. Voice or no voice, the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. That's easy. All you have to do is tell them they're being attacked, and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to great danger," unquote. You got it figured out? I bet you don't. Hermann Göring at the Nuremberg trials. Yeah, man. You could win, I think you could win quite a bit of money betting on that. Well, I've been digging around in the snow in the backyard, and I got down in there to the dirt, and I found a rock case, and it had a book in it. It looks like one of the famous books of the race. So we're going to be quoting from it from time to time, like this one here. "Since this book comes out in the fall, I'd like to take advantage of this early opportunity to wish all of you an enjoyable Christmas season and a happy new year filled with good fortune. Of course, I realize this can't happen for everyone. Some of you are going to die next year. Others will be crippled and maimed in accidents, perhaps even completely paralyzed. Still others will be stricken with diseases that can't be cured or will be horribly scarred in fires. And let's not forget the robberies and rapes. There'll be lots of them. Therefore, many of you will not get to enjoy the happy and fortunate new year I'm wishing for you, so just try to do the best you can." Yeah, that's for the church of what's happening now. Well, let's get serious with about 15 minutes of the state of the economy. Do you really want to know? Come on, Geiser, let us know. We need to know.
Welcome back to the Geiser Report. I'm Max Keiser. Time now to turn to Mitch Feierstein of PlanetPunzi.com. Mitch, welcome back to the Keiser Report.
Thanks for having me again, as usual.
All right, so HSBC, they have taken a full-page ad out to apologize for their crimes relating to tax evasion. Is this enough? What about the money laundering, the Forex rigging, the LIBOR rigging, the Eurobond rigging? Your thoughts?
I'll tell you what. Before it was conspiracy theory. Now it's actual fact and reality. But has anything been done? And what should we really think? As I said years ago, there are the four D's: divert, deflect, deceive, and deny. Now add that in conjunction to extend, pretend, delay, and pray, and what do we have? So we've got HSBC, the new political narrative is adopted that says, okay, well, we're really sorry for what we did, but what you should really be focusing on is the election coming up in 2015. And what is it, Lord Chilcot, the Tony Blair thing, the inquiry, they just say, okay, well, we're going to do an inquiry, and then 5 years later, 10 years later, millions of pounds later, you never hear the end of it. Sorry, we're going to postpone it until after the election.
Well, that's what's great about this country is that everything gets an inquiry, and then they talk about it, and they inquire, and then they go, blah, 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 Lord Snooty Puss, blah, 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 and then they forget about it. Yep. So let's move on. HSBC, they'll never go to jail like those bankers in Iceland because they're part of the establishment. They're part of the made men that make up the crooks that run this country. Let's move on. So is Europe waterboarding Greece?
Greece is an interesting scenario, and I really hope that people realize that 95% of that bailout money, the $340 billion, went to bail out the bank's irresponsible behavior. Now, the people of Greece got less than 5% of that money, and there's a global economic depression going on that people are denying. President Obama last week, for the first time, said Greece is in an economic depression. Unemployment is over 30%. Youth unemployment is over 60%. So what needs to be done is a repudiation of the debt, not pretend and extend, pray and delay.
Let me ask you something. This debt, this $300 billion or so debt in euros that they're talking about Greece owes. $60 billion, roughly, is German. $40 billion or so is France. Isn't it true that if they simply say we're not paying the debt, that these countries like Germany and France, well, maybe not so much Germany, but definitely in France, it triggers a Lehman Brothers-like moment in their banking system?
I think the biggest problem, Max, is not the $340 billion. The problem are the derivative exposures that nobody wants to talk about. I mean, if you think about it, Citibank has $70 trillion of derivatives on their book.
But that was the problem with Lehman Brothers, too. They had huge derivatives on the books, and when you took away the actual cash from underneath the Ponzi scheme, as you read about in Planet Ponzi, you have a toppling over. I'm saying, if you took $40 billion out of France and their supposed cash reserves, doesn't it trigger a Ponzi-like cascade of derivatives failures in a Lehman-like moment? Doesn't Greece have that as their point of leverage?
Absolutely. That's why the ECB and Germany, despite the kabuki theater that we're seeing by the politicians saying we're not going to bail out the Ponzi scheme, they need to bail out the Ponzi scheme. You can't ever taper a Ponzi scheme, and this is the motherlode of Ponzi schemes, because Italy's next, Spain is next, Ireland, Portugal, France.
So Yanis Varoufakis, who's the finance minister over there, who's now the most famous economist in the world, I would say, and finance minister, what would you advise him to do?
Repudiate the debt and just say, look, we're not going to pay it back. I mean, what are they going to do? Come up with a perpetual bond, a 100-year bond or something, and shift the maturity? Now, that's a default. But since there's no rule of law anymore, they'll just change the regulations and say, because you restructured that debt, it's not really a default. It's 100 years. You pay no principal. You pay nothing. That's a default.
So can't Yanis point to Iceland and say, look, they repudiated the debt, they put bankers in jail, the economy crashed, now it's back, but they got rid of the problem?
Absolutely. What I think they need to do is find out the banks that created the problem to begin with and say the onus is back on you. And, you know, in capitalism without bankruptcy is like Catholicism without hell. So if you go after the people that caused the problem, they should have to be the people who bear the brunt of it. So you deserve to be insolvent. You don't deserve a bailout. And the people don't deserve to be pushed down even further by a government. I mean, the way that Germany acted in the deliberations was appalling. You know, the looks, the glares, the hubris, the arrogance. Look, I don't care what the people voted for. Your vote doesn't matter. There is no democracy. This is a kleptocracy.
Remember, Greece was going to have a referendum. And then Germany came in and canceled the referendum.
That's right. But they'll never have a referendum in this country. That's the other thing. It's, you know, divert, deflect, deceive, and deny.
What about Cameron, who says that these fat, bad bankers, HSBC, caught stealing from the cookie jar, we're going to give them a slap on the wrist, but hey, you down there on Benefit Street, you're eating too much, you're obese, we're going to cut you off from your benefits. Doesn't he have it, you know, Bass Ackwards, where he should be cutting the fat cats off from the quantitative easing and 0% interest rates to restore sanity to this economy and leave the frickin' poor people alone for once?
I think what they also need to do is look at why did Gaddafi and people like that, the despots of the world, come and launder their money and property here? And Gaddafi had billions of dollars worth of London property that he stole from the people. I mean, that is what they should be focusing on. But
why do all the major scandals happen through London? AIG, Madoff, JP Morgan, the MF Global, they all come through London. It's the, as Bill Black in America says, it's the cesspool of regulatory, non-regulatory, it's a Lilliputians trying to hold down the Stuart Gullivers of HSB fraud, and they don't do a good job.
Well, we've got propaganda as a new art form. Both the Tory Party and the Labour Party for this new election have hired Obama spinners. Jim Messina and Axelrod, both of them, have come here to spin the election.
Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely.
What?
You know that.
They hired shysters from America to come to
Both of them worked on Obama's campaign. So, you know, they're paying them tens of millions of dollars to come in and get the voters. And actually, in one of the campaign posters for David Cameron, it was interesting. It was a picture of a nice country road, but that was the road to Weimar Republic, which is where the currency's headed.
What about Iceland? Iceland, of course, put some bankers in jail now. And, you know, your thoughts about this. You're a freaking banker. You're a banker. Some of your brothers and sisters went and are going to jail.
So I'm an event-driven macro trader. So I protect the fiduciary interests of my clients, and we did well last year. And I just look to make sure that we don't have a blow-up. You know, I don't do anything that's reckless. I'm not a kid that follows the momentum.
I know, but it's your industry, roughly. And so are you crestfallen that some of your associates tangentially in this industry are now going to jail? Does it break your heart?
Well, I wake up every day fearful. of what's been going on in these markets and what the central bankers' manipulations, because it's going to hit something that's going to be totally catastrophic like we've never seen in the history of the planet before. I've got a couple
of
charts.
You seem to be evasive on this point, Mitch. Let me hammer this home, because I think I've discovered this soft underbelly of Mitch Feierstein. These four bankers were found to be crooks. They're going to jail. Now, that's going to be good for the industry, because you're putting away the bad guys, right?
In Iceland, yes.
That's right.
Yes, it is, but it should be a template. But Iceland is like, it's so minuscule compared to everything else.
But the rule of law applies to all. Whether it's big or small, it's still the rule of law.
I agree. There's a rule of law in Iceland, but nowhere else in the world. So I think you've got to either apply it everywhere, which is what they should have done, and that was my argument in 2007, that there should have been the rule of law applied to everybody. And we have something that we can look at. You'll see zero bankers in jail on page 259 from my book, and it explains how many.
Now, the appendix will be some bankers in jail. Let's talk about Mark Carney talking about bankers that should be in jail. He says that, you know, he's worried about deflation. But despite the $57 trillion in new debt that's been created since the financial crisis, he's still warbling on about deflation. How come he can talk about deflation when now they're getting close to $100 trillion in money printing? And what's going on here?
Well, I've got two charts that we can discuss. First is the U.S. dollar versus the Canadian dollar, the Mark Carney effect. And you can see from this chart that everybody's talking about the Russian ruble losing 50%, but the Canadian dollar has lost close to 40%, 36% is
exactly. How come Newsnight's not laughing hysterically on their show on the BBC that the Canadian dollar is getting slammed about as much as the Russian ruble? It seems like selective chortling on the BBC's part.
Of course,
I forgot, they're financially illiterate. Evan Davies is
That's exactly right,
too,
but that's part of it.
Right.
So, as you said, Mark Carney promised that there was going to be a boom in 2015 in the UK. Well, it might be a kaboom or an explosion, but he created the biggest property bubble in Canada's history, and now he's brought it to the UK. So their currency has declined, the oil revenues have collapsed, their GDP has collapsed, everything is falling apart. He was the governor of the Bank of Canada, as you know, and now he's come over here to do the same thing here ahead of the 2015 election. Along with that chart, we should also look at the velocity of money. Liquidity never provides a solution for insolvency. Okay, and I think people are confused about that. But if you look at the velocity of money, it goes straight down. So nothing's being spent. Most of the recovery is a faux recovery that the politicians are touting as a recovery. And they're just inflating massive asset bubbles in every asset class whatsoever. A little later, we have two of the most important charts that anybody could ever look at coming up.
Oh, my God. That sounds exciting. I'm Twitter-pated just thinking about it in anticipation. But speaking of insolvent banks, let's talk about the Federal Reserve Bank, leveraged at, I think now, last I checked, 60 to 1. Isn't the Federal Reserve Bank in America, and I suppose you could say the Bank of England here in the UK, technically they're insolvent?
Yeah, the Fed is insolvent, but the Fed's leverage is higher than 60 to 1. I would put it closer to 100.
Okay, so the Federal Reserve Bank of America, which is the supposedly the buffer. You know, it's the go-to bank when things get bad. That bank is insolvent. The IMF, before the Greek crisis of 2008, in that period, was insolvent, and they were going to shut it down because it was bankrupt. It was only because of creating that crisis that they legitimized their existence. But if the Bank of England also is, I don't know what the current leverage numbers are, but I'm sure they're similar to the ECB or the Federal Reserve Bank or Bank of Tokyo, it's insolvent. So even by extension, you can say that HSBC, Lloyd's, RBS, and Barclays are also insolvent, in that if you were to suddenly deprive them of this free money that they're getting from the insolvent Bank of England, they would, within 24 hours, have to shut their doors because there is nothing there.
Well, this is going to be the problem, and this is what, you know, I wake up fearful of every day. The causes of the original crisis were too much debt, too much credit, and too much leverage. Now, those three things are much bigger now than they were before. The United States has $225 trillion in debt. Under President Obama, the debt has doubled. We're way above $18 trillion right now. With all the entitlement programs and government guarantees, it puts us at $225 trillion, which can never, never be repaid. Now, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out one day this Ponzi scheme is approaching a final death rattle, and I think that day is coming up fairly soon.
When Mark Carney says that there is a recovery, when in the U.S. they talk about the economy in terms of recovery, that would by definition mean they would start raising rates. That's what a recovery looks like. Instead, they're talking about lowering rates or going into negative interest rates, which by definition is an economy in collapse. So doesn't, in fact, Mark Carney's prescription of lowering rates, doesn't this, in fact, cause deflation instead of fighting deflation?
Absolutely, Max. I think that ZIRP, zero interest rate policy, negative interest rate policy, they cause the problem. But the central bankers, groupthink, herd mentality is the problem. I mean, he's making $6 million during his tenure, Mark Carney. Then he's going to go back to Canada after the big implosion.
I want to talk about the Canada some more, because I think it's very important. Can you stay for the second half?
I'd love to.
All right, good. Okay, and that's going to do it for this edition of the Kaiser Report with me, Max.
Well, that's pretty plain, isn't it? Did you get it? Did you get it? Well, I'll give you another clue. Well, I had something for you there, but I can't find it. But anyhow, this thing, look at Canada. You see, Canada, ever since the so-called lying, they got the conservative, they call them the conservatives. They're about as conservative as my dog. They immediately started selling off the infrastructure of Canada. And they sold off and got rid of all their protective programs for the ecology and for oil spills and all that kind of stuff. Got rid of all that stuff. And now they got they were counting on that Keystone pipeline, but in reality they already sold that oil off to the Chinese before it even gets in the pipeline. So Canada is going to be, I think we're going to have some snowbirds from Canada be coming down here, and they may be staying a while. Yeah, you go down to the southwest in the wintertime and you'll see hundreds and thousands of those people down here living in giant recreational vehicle parks in the desert and so forth, and the regular cities. Most of these people are coming in there from Canada. I'll tell you one thing, if I didn't have a lady that prefers a house, I'd be living in a recreational vehicle myself, or a small mobile home, because I think it's ridiculous anymore to maintain a house. Well, here's a song that might cheer you up and it might make you more miserable. I tend to be an optimist, but an optimism based on cynicism itself, that I'm optimistic that things are going to get worse and the system is eating its tail. Chomp, 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 chomp.
Yeah, 4, 1, 2.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. Take it all, 'cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the
Well, I don't know whether you've heard, but what they're doing in Washington now, La Cesspool Grande, they're wanting to, they don't want to raise the taxes on the top 1-2% of the people in the country, the billionaires. No, they're trying to shift it over to a consumption tax. And a consumption tax screws the poor and the middle class. And that's their plan now. They're going to try to make up their budgets with a consumption tax. So I don't think it does any good, but you might tell your congressman, don't come home because he got a guillotine waiting on him if he passes that damn thing. But anyhow, they'll probably get it passed, and then it's going to be the poor and the middle class, what's left of it, to pay the price. Just remember that. I was going through some of my files here on my computer, and I found one here from Majority Rights, which I've, of course, read before, but he lists several problems with the right wing in the United States. And I'm going to read a few of them. Number one, Jew obsession. Maybe some, but even if we wanted Jews to identify with us, most of it would be disingenuous. They see themselves as a separate people, while we state our agenda as separatists, not Nazi, who seek to eliminate them from the earth. We have the moral high ground, and if by chance we are off the mark or exaggerate their causative agency in certain problems, we've not enacted something that cannot be corrected. That said, it's clear enough that we need to return to them as often as any problem for us, though turning to other problems in turn as they arise, we should. Agreed that focus on them alone is antagonistic is a mistake. Some have gone so far as to take the position that we ought to drop everything else until we depose them. The argument is valid. They have a line of limited credit for themselves and can readily buy off people as they have with the U.S. Congress and Senate, as they have in co-opting Ukrainian nationalism. But we should not chase the red cape of Judaism in what may not be a goal achievable on time, vis-a-vis removing them from all power positions. But we should rather center our focus on our functional autonomy from them and turn to our various problems accordingly. That's the first criticism of the right wing. The second one is victimology. He says he disagrees. In fact, I think the right wing is didactically macho, not utilizing the valid feedback that victimization can provide. The right tends rather to value Nietzschean stoicism, the impervious Superman. It buys into some of the toxic notions of honor that have taken us into various kinds of Pickett's charge type of scenario. Rather, Jewish interests would use this kind of incitement of wimpish complaining and victimization to distract from the nepotism of theirs and others, and the deceptive tactics they have used to gain power. Okay, here's the third position. Stereotypes. Criticism sounds Jewy. On the contrary, we are about reconstructing legitimacy of characteristic patterns and discrimination on their basis, as opposed to the real liberal hegemony of being forced to judge every individual on their own merit. At first blush, to criticize stereotypes seems to interject a Jewish PC criticism provided to sophomores. Perhaps more explanation and refinement of criticism is necessary. Certainly there are those who draw vulgar stereotypes, but the legitimacy of stereotyping appears central in what we need to do. Number four, egos and narcissism. There is some of that, sure, and I would agree that it's characteristically right-wing. That's why Terrible Tommy has not ever put himself up as the Grand Poopah. I give advice. I'm not the super leader or anything like that. I'm one of the boys. Number five, World War II. Definitely, most normal people concerned for the white European interests should be sick of would-be white nationalist advocates associating our cause with Hitler. How wonderful Hitler was, how perfect NS Germany was, how they were only victims and everyone who opposed them was on the wrong side. It is hindsight, and if hindsight is to be invoked, then why not lament the fact that inter-European war was initiated at all and work to prevent inter-European war from happening again, like they're trying to do now with the Ukraine, U.S.-backed Ukraine, and the EU. Present-day Germans do not want guilt trips, and that is correct and fine. They should not have guilt trips and penalties put upon them. But revisionist types turn around and want to lay guilt trips and perhaps penalties on those of this generation who have nothing to do with events of World War II. Enough. Before we fully buy into the designations by the powers that be in the status quo, that we are represented by this or that, or that the order, for example, were right-wing extremists, we ought to compare their efforts to the revolutionary movements that are now respected as a part of our tradition and given mainstream acceptance as having been eminently valid. In that regard, we might also compare Bob Matthews and the Order with the Sons of the Revolution. Well, I can tell you one thing. Order members were from different groups or different origins. Some were identity Christians, some were Odinists, and some were atheists. So you had everything combined into one in the Order. Before we fully buy into designations by powers that be of the status quo, we are represented by this or that order. For example, we're right-wing extremists. We ought to compare our efforts to revolutionary movements that are now respected as a part of our tradition, which I just read, and given mainstream acceptance as having been eminently valid. In that regard, we might also compare Bob Matthews and the Order with the Sons of the Revolution. I think I've caught up with what I already told you. Veritable American terrorists in the separation from Britain, just as they and their Declaration of Independence are now looked upon as sacrosanct by Americans, so too Pilsudski is now esteemed as a nationalist hero. And just as the Sons of the Revolution were breaking the law and broaching stigma, great danger and execution if caught, Pilsudski was a flamboyantly breaking the law and broaching stigma, great danger, and execution if caught. Pilsudski was flamboyantly breaking the law. If he had been captured, he would have been executed, as was Bob Matthews. Pilsudski was a Polish patriot. Anyhow, that makes sense. It's difficult for me to understand why anybody would call the order right-wing, because the majority of all the leaders in the country condemned Bob Matthews and the order, just like they had condemned Rockwell before him. So the conservative-type right-wing racists are certainly not our friends, because whenever anybody does put their thoughts into action, they're the first out of the door to claim, oh no, we would never do that, we condemn Bob Matthews and all his guys. Yeah, they're like Tom Robb. He carved himself out a little empire down there in Missouri or Arkansas, says Bob Matthews was just a typical criminal. That's what he called him. So why do we have anything to do with the conservative right-wing racists? unless they agree to come across the line and join the real world. Well, let's see what's going on over across the pond. Holocaust skeptic sentenced to 2 years in prison in France. The math teacher and father of 9 children, Vincent Renard, is an atheist who doesn't believe in the Holocaust religion, and for this, 2 years imprisonment. You can desecrate a Christian church, collect kudos for burning a Quran, but when 5 French school kids tipped over a few kosher gravestones at an Alsace cemetery, all hell broke loose. Well, let's see here. The last 2 days, this was the item number 1 on France 2 TV news bulletins, taking up over 5 minutes each time for tipping over gravestones. Yet these kids, in their own way, exclaim the king is naked, and in theory, they could be looking to up to 5 years in prison. That's what they said on the news. Of course, the Jews would love to drink their blood, at least by the way of having them brutally sodomized by hardened criminals, preferably Arabs. But why don't the Jews repatriate their kosher corpses to their Israel in the first place? Don't they love the Holocaust and anti-Semitism? Let's see. Well, here's an interesting article from Israel. The Israeli government quietly funds KKK-like organizations. Wow. What's that all about? A guy by the name of Yossi Gervitz wrote it. The government funds an ultra-racist organization which campaigns against miscegenation and assimilation. Well, we feel that way, too. The LHVH, Preventing Assimilation in the Holy Land organization, made a lot of headlines in recent months, much due to a very active MK Zippy Hot Livy Likud. It is hyperactive in preventing miscegenation marriages and preventing the pure daughters of Israel from soiling themselves in contact with non-Jews. It is also rather quick to support the lynching of non-Jews, even if the lynching was nothing to do with the assimilation or miscegenation. In this weekend's Haaretz newspaper supplement, Yuri Blau and Shay Greenberg show, which is an admitted Kahananist organization, receives indirect funding from the government. It is funded by the Kamiya Association, which in turn receives funds from the Welfare Ministry. Originally, note Blau and Greenberg, Kamiya was in fact a welfare association, but in 2002 it amended its goals and added 2 new articles. Quote, aiding girls from broken homes who are facing the danger of forced conversion, assimilation, and falling into a life of crime by rehabilitating them in an apartment and by providing them with sociological and psychological help to re-enter Jewish society. The other was aiding the hill people, extreme settlers in Judea and Samaria and Gaza. Well, that's interesting. Let's see if there's any more to that. Leaders of the Kamiya are prominent Kahanists. And, you know, of course, Kahanis, he ran the Jewish Defense League before he was assassinated by Arabs or Egyptians in New York City. But Irv Rubin, who ran the operation after Kahane was dead, was quite racist, very racist, in fact. And a lot of people don't know that. One of them, Levi Hazan, spent 6 months in prison, a rather severe sentence when it comes to Jewish terrorists, for his part in an attack on a Palestinian bus, which wounded 6. Others of Kamiya's leaders were held in administrative detention, which is rather unusual for Jews. You know, you have to wonder what benefits us worrying and empathizing with Palestinians. non-white Palestinians. And I, like I told you many times, I remember visiting New York to do a television show back in the 80s or early 90s. And there was a pro-Palestinian parade, and every communist group in the United States was marching with them. And here was the Jewish Defense League demonstrating against them. So think that over. We either don't have a dog in the fight, or we certainly, I don't think, should support the Palestinians. I mean, they've had a long time to straighten things out, and they haven't done it. They've never had decent leadership that would sit down and make a deal. So here's some Jews over there that are fighting to protect their race, their racial component from miscegenation. So that's something to think about going on here, you know. Things get a little complicated because technically I can't condemn anybody that's working to maintain a separatism among at least part of their people. Now, obviously, there's a lot of non-white Jews around, too, of course. But if there's a section of the Jews that's white and want to maintain that whiteness, I couldn't condemn them. Now, one of them, Levi Hazan, spent 6 months in prison, or rather, oh no, wait a minute here. The manager of Camille's Women's Safe House, Raquel Barans, is one of the signatories of the rabbi's wife's letter. Apart from the safe house, which Blau and Greenberg report they found empty, LHVH also operates a ratting line encouraging people to report on neighbors planning to rent apartments to non-Jews. Well, if that's the way they want to operate there in Israel, I think that's their business. Just like here, if you don't want to rent or sell property to a black, as well as providing special kosher titles to businesses who promise to refrain from employing non-Jews. Well, I'd like to see white businesses do that here. The government, through the welfare ministry, is responsible for about half the yearly budget of Kimia, about 600,000 to 700,000 NIS. Now, this is blatant racism, this guy says. For one simple reason, according to Jewish law, which the Israel recognizes and, in this case, enforces, Judaism is passed through the matrilineal line, the children of a Jewish woman who converts or who merely chooses a non-Jewish life partner, are Jews. At best, they are captive children, Jews who did not receive proper Jewish upbringing. On the other hand, a Jewish man who picks a non-Jewish wife or partner exits Judaism. Again, we're speaking halakhic, Orthodox law here, and his children will not be considered Jews. It would make sense, then, for such anti-miscegenation campaigns to focus on Jewish males. Yet, for reasons easy to guess, racism always went hand in hand with misogamy. That is not the case, and we're warned of Palestinian witches brewing seduction potions from the lungs of rabbits. LHVH isn't the only Israeli organization active in this field. It is proceeding from the old ultra-Orthodox Yad Le'Achim Association, which also dabbles in the anti-missionary activity, and as such is more of an equal opportunity hater. Yad Le'Achim, too, enjoys official support. The city of Ashkelon provided it with a building, and it received systematic aid from the Ministry of Interior in Israel. Hatovli claimed her support of the Kahanists was derived from the concept of Zionism, which says that Jews should marry Jews. In this, she is certainly correct. Well, I have no problem with that. The great enemies of Zionism weren't the anti-Semites. They were often enthusiastic allies. since they too thought Jews should immigrate from Europe, but rather the assimilators and members of the Bund. The first group denies the concept of Jewish fate, and the latter refuses to accept the a people apart concept and tied their fate to that of other people in the bubbling cauldron of Eastern Europe, with few exceptions. Let's see here. Where are we at here? I'm going to start here. The first group denies the concept of Jewish fate. I did that. Mapai, the forerunner of labor, for all its talk of fraternity, refuses to open a mixed, combining Jewish and Arab children kindergarten in the 1930s, Haifa, citing fear of assimilation. Now, of course, you know, Israel's got one of the largest prisons in the world, I guess, or at least in that part of the world, on their southern borders, that's full of blacks that have tried to get into Israel, and they're not letting them in. So what do you think about that? Are you saying I'm becoming pro-Jewish? Oh, I criticize them when they deserve criticism, but I don't criticize them all the time. The same with Obama. I criticize him, and I don't like that we've got a black president or half-black president. But on the other hand, if he does something right, I'm not going to call him names. You could claim that ideally Zionism could exist without being racist. Practically, however, it's hard to think of a form of Zionism, Jewish ultranationalism, which could promote equality. Israeli law does not recognize equality to be a basic legal right. See, there's a good point right there. We don't have it here. Even those Zionists who attacked the folly and unrighteousness of Jewish law stopped at the primal barrier of the fear of blood defilement. So who's calling who neo-Nazis around here? So now we learn that furtively underground, the state of Israel cooperates with the most extreme racists in order to use them in the struggle against Jews' right to cease being Jews. It's worth noting that the Ministry of Education already told Hatefleh's committee it will aid the struggle against assimilation by increasing Jewish identity and advocating family life. But there are limits to what the Education Ministry, even one which forbids its students to read the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, since it recognizes the right to convert, can do. The courts will make noise and possibly even act. There would be an international hue and cry. The Hasbara war effort would suffer. That's what you have organizations like LHVH and Yad Le'Achim for, being the unofficial modesty watch of the Zionist state, acting where the social taboo against miscegenation is much stronger, say, than the one in pre-Nazi German society isn't good enough. And remember, Israel's the only ha-ha democracy in the Middle East. That's interesting. What do you think about that? You know, it's interesting. I think Jews are split up like everybody else over the race issue. I think they have been for a long time. I've talked to many Jews who cussed and damned the blacks, and I've talked to many Jews who cussed and damned their own rabbis. I knew a Jew who used to speak on the same podium as Gerald L. K. Smith, and he used to just go on and on about how much he hated the rabbis and so forth, the power structure inside the Jew community. So it's interesting to think about. What's going on? Now, that comes from the Ugly Truth website, which has a lot of friends that I recognize as interesting people. They don't want you to talk race on their radio shows, and they'd pass out if you said nigger, and they're an interesting bunch. I got Mark Dankoff, and there's a whole bunch of them. I've been on some of their shows, but most of them are white. A couple of them are not white. And they run these shows, and they're not really off into the conservative, well, what we would call the right-wing racist right. They're not really off into that, but they walk a tightrope. And I don't get along with most of them because they don't want to talk to me and have me talk about the race issue. So here we got the some people in Israel that are talking about the race issue. So that brings up interesting questions. I think if I was in Israel, I would look those people up and talk to them at least. A lot of those people that have certain loose connections to our struggle are interesting because they are, a lot of them are race mixers and even of non-white race themselves, which is quite interesting. I know the Institute for Historical Review has had people who were very much into the anti-Holocaust thing, but they were race mixers and so forth in their private lives. In fact, I knew two or three of them that were married to non-white women, so they're not in our camp, even though they may say things that we may say, oh, that's pretty good, but in totality, when race is the most important issue, they fall by the wayside. And they don't have a problem with condemning Tom Metzger. Although they seem to have no problem running around with people like Willis Carto of the old Liberty Lobby and Spotlight newspaper, who is a hardcore Nazi. I mean, you know, he don't belong to a Nazi party, but he used to hold Hitler birthday parties every year. And he definitely was a proto-Nazi, which he tried to deny and go to court for, and they proved he was. And so anyhow, it's interesting that a lot of these people that seem to be fellow travelers that don't like you to say nigger on their radio show actually cohabitate in a political way with one of the biggest anti-Jew, pro-Nazi guys in the country. Interesting. Well, Geraldo Rivera in his old age, he's starting to look old, that's funny, has a few things to say about hip-hop.
Conservatives, as if they were sort of equally ideologically and self-contained camps. Do you fit into either one of those?
No, I'm a militant moderate. I borrow from both. For instance, I am, as I mentioned, immigration reform, gay marriage, and abortion are all things that's why I voted for Barack Obama three times. On the other hand, I hate Benghazi. The Benghazi has become pornographic. I think the way they flog the Benghazi non-scandal, I think it's really very unfortunate on the right-hand side. But I think that, for instance, hip-hop. Hip-hop has done more damage to black and brown people than racism in the last 10 years. When you find the youngster, a Puerto Rican from the South Bronx or a black kid from Harlem, who has succeeded in life other than being the one-tenth of one-tenth of 1% that make it in the music business, that's been a success in life, walking around with his pants around his ass, and with visible tattoos, or it is this whole ethos. And I love Russell Simmons. He's a dear friend of mine. I admire his business acumen. At some point, those guys have to cop to the fact that by encouraging this distinctive culture that is removed from the mainstream, they have encouraged people to be so different from the mainstream that they can't participate other than, the racks and the garment center and those entry-level jobs. And I lament it. I really do. I think that it has been very destructive culturally.
Okay, there are a lot of directions I can go there, but I don't want to go down an entire racial hole because there are a lot of potential explanations for why there is alienation of minority communities.
Oh, yeah, this, of course, hip hop. But I think that fashion plays a part.
Well, Geraldo Rivera saying something about the wonderful hip hop Jew moneymaker machine. I think he may be treading on thin ice here. We'll see what happens about it. They may break his nose too, the two boys in the music business, because they're making a fortune off these blacks. Well, that's about it for today, boys and girls. We're almost at the end. About 4 minutes. We'll see you tomorrow, Thursday. That's right. In the meantime, remember, I have nothing to say.
Can I come into your house?
No, you can't come into my house unless you've got a warrant.
Well, that's a bunch of shit. You must be guilty of something.
No, I have nothing to say.
Well, we just want to talk to you about somebody you know.
Well, I have nothing to say.
What about your wife over there?
No, I have nothing to say either.
Well, could you come down to the office and let's talk this over?
Are you putting me under arrest or do you have a warrant?
Well, no, but we could clear a lot of things up, you know. We want to help you because we realize you're probably innocent of anything, but we need to know about this other guy.
Well, forget it. Forget it. My husband is not going with you anywhere. He's staying right here, unless you've got a warrant. Bug off, asshole.